everybody. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for John today. He'll be back tomorrow, July 1st, second half of the year. Wow. I think we're all pretty happy about that. I know I am. July is a great month. My birthday is this month. We have the 4th of July this coming up weekend, which means long weekend, even better. And I've got my son coming home to visit. So all good for this month. But we have some other news that I think is also good for everybody else, not just me. Weekly jobless claims hit a new pandemic era low today. And actually, this obviously happens in the past. So this was last week's numbers. But the new numbers for unemployment, first-time unemployment claims, were 364,000. That is below, well below the Dow Jones estimate of 390,000. And it's the lowest number since the pandemic began. If you think about where we were last March and April, I mean, it was crazy numbers of people losing their jobs. In total, you know, some 50 million Americans experienced some form of losing their job, going into a forced, they had forced layoff. They had to take time off from their jobs. They had a pay cut. I mean, just a serious number of people were affected. And, you know, to give you, you know, a little bit of context, though, because even though the initial jobless claims numbers sound really good, and they are, there are still more than 11 million Americans receiving benefits through pandemic-related programs. So what does that mean? It means that we're getting better. Things are improving, which is nice, right? But there's still a lot of people out there that need help. And this speaks to what the Federal Reserve Bank has been talking about with its kind of push-pull and vision of what they call transitory events, like inflation is a transitory event, meaning that it's here for now, but it's probably going to die down pretty soon. We'll see about that. But it's really interesting. We also saw some numbers earlier this week. Yesterday, I talked about it. 692,000 jobs were created in May, which was another good number, right? And we're going to see the non-farm payroll count for June coming out, right? That's expected to show a gain of 706,000, which is important. And we're supposed to, there's an expectation that the unemployment rate will drop to 5.6%. So employment is on an upswing. You know, the number of jobs that are out there available for the taking, well, sort of, you know how that works, highest number in history. The number of people who are voluntarily quitting their jobs, also at an extremely elevated number, which means that people have more confidence that they're going to go out there and they're going to find a new job. We're seeing pressure put on employers to pay up to, you know, people who are working for them. If they want them to work, they're having to pay them more. They're having to give them signing bonuses, benefits. I opened up my Lyft app yesterday because I was I'm going to New York tomorrow, and I was trying to plan my trip, and I noticed that it said work for Lyft, $2,900, and as if we'll give you a bonus of $2,900 if you come drive for Lyft. Uber is telling people, hey, don't worry about driving for us full time. Give us whatever hours you can. Employers are really desperate to get people working again, getting them to take jobs and getting them to move forward. And it's super interesting. You know, in my mind, the whole Uber and Lyft economy sprung up when people were looking for new ways to afford their lifestyles. And what's going to be super interesting to see over the next year, particularly, but beyond that, is now that people use the government money during the pandemic to deleverage, to pay down their debt and build up their savings accounts, and they got better in balance with the expenses that they have or didn't have, and they don't have to pay, you know, student loan debt for a while. Federal student loan debt is still on pause. Are they still going to be looking for those side hustles to bring in that extra income? It's hard to know. It's hard to know. And I think it's going to be very interesting to watch and see. I think people's, you know, financial eyes are still bigger than their financial wallets. But how they go about filling those and how they go about deciding those, I think that's just what's going to be super interesting. Anyway, the jobs report today is sponsored by Breezy.hr. Coming up, we have really interesting stuff for you today, all about the economy and some cool technology stuff. Ian Schur, the editor-at-large at CNET, is going to be up next. We're going to get to him in just a minute. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for John. You can always find me online at bestmoneymoves.com, my financial wellness technology company, or any of the social media except TikTok. Not doing TikTok. Sorry, don't dance. I'm really a klutz. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for John Williams today. It is 12:18, and Ian Schur, editor-at-large of CNET at CNET.com, joins us now. Hey, Ian, it's nice to chat with you again.
Absolutely. I hope all's well.
Everything is doing fine. It's July, and we're going into a long weekend. So
yes, I'm looking forward to that.
And mine's extra long. It starts tomorrow morning. I'm very, very excited.
Hey, that's the smart thing to do. Take that extra day.
I know a lot of people who are making the most of the holiday weekend. I have to, I was laughing when I saw one of the stories you wanted to talk about today about Apple suggesting that you keep their products a safe distance away from medical devices, because I find that Apple iPhones do interfere with a whole bunch of different things.
Yeah, it's an interesting issue that honestly I hadn't even thought about for a long time until it suddenly came up in a conversation, which is that with all of these mobile devices we have, and technology in general, one of the things they are increasingly building into them is magnets, right? And these magnets oftentimes, like on a laptop, it's to actually let the computer know when you close it. It has a magnet that pushes a switch.
Mm-hmm.
And with our phones, especially the iPhone, there is a thing called MagSafe, which is a new magnetic charger that they built, which also works with accessories to, like, you know, have it standing up in your car and stuff like that. And it's super cool. Well, the thing is that it turns out when you are dealing with people who have implanted medical devices, particularly pacemakers or defibrillators or stuff like that, it can disrupt them. And so Apple has put out a statement on their website, kind of a warning document, saying, hey, by the way, if you are one of these people, don't forget to consult with your physician or medical device maker to make sure that you're safe. And that's really key. I mean, a lot of people who have these things know to be safe, but I very mindlessly put my phone into my my shirt pocket when I would walk around sometimes. And if I had a pacemaker, I would be in some trouble.
Yeah, it's interesting. The list from Apple includes AirPods and charging cases, Apple Watch and accessory, HomePod, iPad and accessories, the iPhone and MagSafe devices, Macs and accessories, and Beats, which I forgot Apple owned, but of course they bought them like 2 years ago. And I'm like, Beats? Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Headphones.
Even the keyboard for the iPad, right, which actually has a ton of magnets in it.
Yes, exactly. And the iPad, they talk about things like the iPad Mini, Air, Pro, smart covers and smart folios. And of course, as you said, the keyboard and the, you know, the folio. And, you know, just to hammer home how important it is, I think Apple's created something really interesting with this Apple Watch when it comes to people who have, you know, medical issues. And in fact, I will just sort of give them an unsolicited testimonial, and no, I'm not being paid by Apple, but my mother's cousin's Apple Watch just saved his life last week.
Wow.
What happened was it alerted him that he had a heart issue, and he called his cardiologist, and she said, okay, immediately come in. And they were going to do this little procedure. I mean, literally, he went to the emergency room. They met him there. He went in to do this procedure. And they discovered when they put a scope down to take a look at his heart before they did whatever they were going to do, they saw a blood clot.
Wow.
In his heart. And they were like, okay, we're not doing anything today. You're going home and you're going to get 6 weeks of blood thinners. But all of that came from this pulse that he got from his Apple Watch. And so if you've got, just to hammer this home, if you've got a magnet and it's interfering with this, you know, that would have been a problem for him. So, you know, it's interesting how the unintended consequences of technology and convenience is what I'm just going to say about that.
Absolutely. And there's, I mean, that's the thing is there's a lot of positives and negatives to a lot of this stuff. And I think what people increasingly need to be thinking about is that as these devices not only become more personal, right, because, yeah. you know, smart glasses or whatever else as we get further into the future, but also are used as more medical equipment, you do want to make sure that you are very cognizant of what they can do and what they might do. And like I said, what Apple says, right, talk to your doctor first.
Yeah, I think it's getting really interesting as we're bringing together this different kinds of information. You know, my company, Best Money Moves, deals in the financial side of things, but where we see everything going is pulling it all together, right? And
yeah.
so you've got companies like Google that are buying up, you know, medical companies and health information companies. Apple's doing the same thing. Facebook's doing the same thing. It's just really interesting to see how it's all working together. And to that point, let's talk about Google's new website. This is for people experiencing food insecurity. Well, tell me about that one.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, Google has, when they first started out, right, back, feels like a century ago now. One of the things that was their mission was to collect the world's information and make it easily accessible. Well, this is exactly an example of that. What they've done is that they've worked with a number of organizations, including No Kid Hungry, which helps kids find school lunch programs, Food Finder, which is for food pantries, and the USDA, and it has actually created a special map of 90,000 places you can get free food across the country. The way you get to it is you go to g.co/findfoodsupport, and once you're there, you just type in an address, your home address, for example, and it will show you all the places nearby, when they're open, phone numbers, all sorts of info like that. And look, Google didn't do very much special here, right? They just collected the information together. But that is not easy to do. And this is a great example of where technology can really help people. You know, during the pandemic, we had a significant jump in people who were either at risk of going hungry or were hungry, including 15 million children.
Oh, yeah.
So this is really good to see.
Yeah, I think this is good to see. I wish it had come out last year, but everybody was focused on how do you find who has COVID last year. So
This
year that got solved, and sort of. And now we're focused on this next piece. And this is a really good long-term piece. So kudos to Google for getting that done, and happy to push that out for everybody. Another one of the big fangs, as we put them, Facebook announced Bulletin competing with Substack. The whole newsletter game is interesting. Of course, Twitter just announced its newsletter. I'm surprised that Google hasn't put one out yet as well. But why don't you talk about maybe they haven't. I just missed the story. I don't know.
I can't keep track anymore. I'm just worried about the CNET newsletters myself. But, you know, I think that it's really interesting to see all of these companies that for years had declared email dead, right?
Oh, yeah.
And were building all sorts of stuff to compete with, you know, the new version of communication, whether it was Snapchat or using instant message or Slack, which is a business communication app, whether or not it was all that stuff, they all were saying, who cares about email anymore? Well, now they're all going back to email. And it, what's interesting is that these newsletters, oftentimes they have a personality behind them. So, for example, Facebook recruited Malcolm Gladwell, right, the very famous sociologist-type guy, to write a newsletter himself. Substack has a bunch of particularly political writers, what they're mostly known for, but there's also tech writers and stuff like that, and then Twitter has Review. And I'm really curious to see where this is all going to go because, you know, first off, we're back to the whole conversation of, you know, is Facebook providing tools or are they actually like a media company, which is fascinating in and of itself. But also, like, you know, what does this become, right? Are we back to the world of blogging where we have, you know, individual bloggers with their own websites, but now they have newsletters instead or whatever else? So I'm really fascinated, but I'm curious to see where it ends up going.
Yeah, I am too. And as somebody who's published a newsletter for years and years, you know, it's interesting to think about how these newsletters will change to places like MailChimp, right, which has built an entire business or Constant Contact around doing newsletters and charging them for people. So this is certainly a conversation we're going to want to continue, Ian. I think there's a lot more to come here. Ian Schur is editor-at-large of CNET. You can find his content at CNET.com. Ian, happy 4th of July. Hope you have a great long weekend.
Yes, you too, and even a longer weekend for you.
Oh, don't be jealous. It's not flattering. No, I'm kidding. We'll talk to you again soon.
Take care.
I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for John Williams today. He'll be back tomorrow. It is 12:35 on July 1st. Very exciting stuff. Greg McBride joins us on the line now. He's Senior Vice President and Chief Analyst at Bankrate. You can find Bankrate at bankrate.com. Hi, Greg. Nice to talk to you again.
Good afternoon, Elise. Nice to talk with you as well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So real estate and cash, who doesn't want those things? According to one of your stories this week, those are the top two wish lists for Americans who are looking at investments. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I mean, real estate is one that performs consistently very well. We've been doing this poll better part of a decade. Real estate tends to come out in the top one or two almost every single year, and the percentages don't fluctuate very much. Real estate is, after all, an appropriate long-term investment. But the popularity of cash continues to be a real head-scratcher, and especially this year. Cash is another one that consistently does really well. It tends to be in the top two or three almost every year, and yet this year it was a close second, despite the fact that interest rates were at record lows, and inflation is beginning to perk up. So while cash is absolutely appropriate for short-term needs, that's not what you want to hear for the long term.
Yeah, no, it's a losing proposition when it comes to any sort of medium or long-term investment. If you've got, and we can just do the math for you, for those of you playing along at home. I mean, when you have inflation at, let's say, 2%, and you're earning less than 1%, or in some cases, really, even less than zero. That's not winning. You're losing. You're losing your principal, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That loss of buying power over time is just as damaging as a loss of principal. And I often equate it to the difference between gross pay and net pay. What really counts is what bring home. Well, in investing, it's the same way. It's what does that return translate into in terms of actual buying power? So as you illustrated, if you're earning 1% or these days 0.5% on cash, but inflation runs 2 or 2.5%, you're seeing that buying power steadily chipped away.
And for the last, I got to say, it's 20 years now, interest rates have been really low, not quite as low as they are today, but you certainly aren't earning much. And 10 years ago, one of the big money market accounts broke the buck. So you were certainly in negative territory there. But cash is, for anybody who's a senior living on fixed income, I mean, cash is something that you're sort of counting on, but it's not really generating anything for you.
And as you noted, it hasn't for a very long time. I mean, the average interest rate on the top yielding savings account and money market deposit accounts, dating all the way back to 2007, the average yield over that time is about 1.8%. So it just goes to show we're looking at 14 years of very low interest rates. And, even prior to that, we had, really low rates, particularly from about 2001 through, 2004, 2005, interest rates were at rock bottom levels. So, better part of two decades, we really haven't been able to get much income out of those cash investments, and it's hit seniors in particular quite hard.
Yeah, but here's what I don't understand. So in your survey, you say the cash was most preferred by older millennials aged 32 to 40 at 31%, compared to 25% of Gen X, which would have been the next generation up, 21% of younger millennials and baby boomers. You don't mention seniors in this, or silent generation, but boy, am I really startled that almost a third of older millennials in their 30s are preferring cash. Is that, do you think, I mean, we're speculating here, but do you think it's because they are trying to buy real estate, so they're putting cash away to get their down payments together?
I wish I could tell you that this was a flash in the pan and kind of an anomalous result. It's not. We have seen this consistently for the better part of the last decade. And if anything, it's gotten a little bit better rather than getting worse. But yes, we have seen for years that older cohort of millennials, they have long preferred cash and preferred it at a higher level than their generations that preceded them. And so particularly when we're talking about long-term investing, for years, I was really worried whether or not millennials were going to get into the stock market in a significant enough way to accumulate the retirement nest egg that they need. And so, despite all the activity that we've seen among young investors get involved in the market recently, I think this illustrates that there's still pretty sizable cohort under age 40 that has a high level of risk aversion, preferring cash and kind of staying away from the stock market.
Now, more understandable is when you sliced it the other way by income and education. And so cash investments were cited more than twice as often, 30%, among households with income below $75,000 as among those who had higher than $75,000. And that makes sense to me because even though it's not the correct solution, when you have less, you want to make sure you can see it and you're holding on to it and you're willing to take less risk.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. I mean, it's when you're living paycheck to paycheck, having cash, having money in the bank helps you sleep at night. And yeah, it's not a surprising result, although, the corrosive effect of inflation is still the same, regardless.
So let's talk for just another minute about the real estate side of it. So 28% of Americans prefer real estate. When they say that, are they thinking about it as their home is the investment, or are they thinking about a separate investment that's outside of it, whether that's commercial or rental property or a second home they're renting out or an Airbnb? What do you think's going on there? Did your survey go into any depth on that?
We purposely defined that very broadly. We kind of leave the interpretation into the eye of the beholder, the person taking the poll, in the sense that if one person thinks of it as residential real estate, their primary residence, somebody else is thinking of it as rental properties, that's all going to be, counted together. I think because this is a poll of, a nationally representative group of consumers, I think that response skews heavily towards residential real estate. You see how hot the housing market is now. I think it clearly supports that. But, yes, you could have higher net worth investors that are thinking beyond those boundaries, like rental real estate, commercial real estate, and the like.
Well, I got to say, I mean, when your property, your home goes up an average of 15% in a year, you're thinking to yourself, yeah, I'm investing in real estate. And it was funny, we had Lawrence Yun, the chief economist of the National Association of Realtors, on yesterday. And I said to him, what do you think is going to happen next year? And of course, he was like, oh, it'll go back to 3-4%. I'm like, well, good, because it's going to be another 15%. I'm going to call it a bubble. Like, it's unsupportable, the level of, the explosion in home price appreciation over the last 4 or 5 years is just, it's unsustainable. Right? I mean, even the people are thinking this, it's crazy.
Yeah, we're singing from the same hymnal there. I unsustainable is the word I've used. And, I don't think we're in bubble territory yet. I think what's more likely is kind of what Lawrence was saying, where appreciation moderates or just, sort of flatlines for an extended period of time, that what we've done is kind of pull forward future returns. But to your point, I reserve the right to change that opinion if we continue to see these unsustainable increases sustained, then yeah, we're going to be mentioning the B word a lot more.
Well, we'll have you back to go through all of that. How's that?
Sounds good.
All
thanks,
right.
Elise.
Greg McBride is Senior Vice President, Chief Analyst at Bankrate. You can find him at bankrate.com. Let's go to Steve Grzanich with the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. RCN is expanding in Chicago. The company has acquired the local assets of telecommunications provider WOW. The company is acquiring WOW operations in Chicago, Evansville, Indiana, and an area in Maryland for $661 million. RCN will take on about 75,000 additional residential and 2,800 new business customers in Chicago. Chicago startup Spotivity has raised $1 million in seed round funding. Chicago Inno reports the influx of capital will be used to expand the platform to more states and countries. Spotivity was founded in 2018 and helps teenagers ages 13 to 17 find after-school activities at organizations like the YMCA and part-time jobs at companies like Chipotle. The company's platform has about 5,000 users who can browse 10,000 programs from 2,000 different providers in Chicago. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Steve, and you've got the business of food for us?
I sure do. Let's say, Elise, that you have the opportunity to reimagine a convenience store. Let's say 7-Eleven. You can remodel it however you want, redecorate it whatever you'd like, sell whatever kind of food you'd like. The question is, would you still have that hot dog roller on the counter?
We don't. Our version of a hot dog roller is breakfast tacos, which are still our number one selling item. much, much more delicious than the kind of stale, sad hot dogs.
That's Mike Lavatola, who did have the opportunity to reimagine the corner convenience store. He is the co-founder and CEO of Foxtrot.
I think people have a very lackluster view of what their local convenience store can be. And I think what's, you know, really fun about Foxtrot is it gives us an opportunity to show people that it can be something, you know, really fun and exciting.
It started 7 years ago as an online coffee, food, and wine delivery service, but 4 years ago, Foxtrot went brick and mortar, and while this is definitely not your father's convenience store, there is still convenience.
If you're on the run, whether you're at work or just grabbing something quick, we have awesome salads, sandwiches, all kinds of things that we make fresh every day and are sitting in our grab and go. But then we also have a cafe menu made on site.
Foxtrot's ninth location opened yesterday at Milwaukee and Damon, and Lavatola says more are coming.
Being able to go into these neighborhoods with an offering that features local makers and local artisans and local purveyors and giving people a reason to be excited about going back into their local markets has been really fun and rewarding.
Foxtrot, another Chicago homegrown food business. At the Chicago Board of Trade, it's a lot quieter today than it was yesterday. Yesterday we saw soybeans go up 90 cents a bushel. Right now beans are trading about 2 cents higher at 1401 a bushel. Corn is up only a penny and a half, and wheat is trading down about 9 cents. Today's Farm to Your Belly feature, it is National Ginger Snap Day. It's also National Creative Ice Cream Flavors Day. By the way, Foxtrot pairs ice cream with wine. I did not know that was a thing. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth joins us. She is WGN's reporter on the go. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Elise. Always nice to hear you in the seat.
It is very nice to be here today. So I don't even know where to start. There's so much going on in the news. Walgreens is really moving on Wall Street. Maybe we start there. They're swinging to a profit and raising their forecast, but everybody on Wall Street seems really freaked out that once the vaccines are done, they're not going to really be making money. What do you think?
Yeah, that's exactly what's going on. So Walgreens, they raised their outlook for the year. They laid out their strategy to drive growth. They said, hey, look, we had this stronger than we expected third quarter. But even so, we saw that reaction on Wall Street with shares falling a little bit in early trading earlier today. And part of that is not even once we get over the hump of vaccination. It's part of that fear is that we've already kind of maybe vaccinated all the people who are willing to get vaccinated. We're starting to slow down so much that there's some fear because I think investors realize part of that bigger than expected profit bigger than expected quarter had to do with so many people being in the store, people getting vaccines there while they're there, they're picking up a couple of items, things like that. So I think there's a lot of wait and see, just like there has been really all year for so many things. But I think this is no exception.
There's so many companies like Walgreens that did incredibly well during the pandemic. And yet online, they did well also. I mean, a lot of drugstores are now like Costco they're mailing or overnighting drugs, and that business has exploded for them and so many other people.
Absolutely. I think watching the pharmacy retail space for the next couple of months, but even beyond that, is going to be really interesting. We saw earlier this week that Walmart announced a lower priced insulin, an analog insulin, which is kind of the preferred type. And that's a kind of a jab at Amazon, who had gotten into the pharmacy space. So I think it's going to be really interesting to watch how that plays out with things like CVS and Walgreens. Of course, also earlier this week, we heard CVS is expanding their presence with Aetna here in Illinois. So I think the pharmacy space might be kind of brutal here for a while. There's some tug of war going on here between these four big brands.
Well, hopefully it's going to be to the benefit of consumers, which, you know, typically competition typically works that way. Not always. All right, let's go to outer space, because there's just a lot happening in outer space as well. You'd think maybe not, but there actually is. So SpaceX launched 88 satellites, and an 82-year-old woman is going to space with Jeff Bezos. Hello, the world is changing.
I know. These are not things we would have said very, not that long ago.
No.
Let's start with this astronaut story. I love this story. So an 82-year-old woman trained in 1961 with NASA in the Mercury program, and it was 13 women that trained. It was kind of casually known as the Women in Space program, trying to do exactly that, get more women in space. She graduated at the top of her class. She did so many wonderful things. Like her testing was off the charts. She, you know, even said at one point that she was told, being in this sensory deprivation tank, that she scored better than John Glenn. Nonetheless, none of the 13 women were sent to space. None of them ever went. And so here she is. Since 1961, she is a pilot. She has logged so many hours. She had a really funny quote. She said something like, "Everything the FAA has, I got a license for, and I can also outrun you." She's like very spirited, this woman. She has over 19,000 flying hours. She's taught more than 3,000 people how to fly private and commercial aircraft. So she is a tough cookie, but she is going, she's been selected by Jeff Bezos. There's a really cute post on Jeff Bezos' Instagram with her that she just looks so elated that after all this time, she is finally going to go to space with him and his brother and one other person that has not been announced yet. That was a bidder. I think they came like in about 28 million.
Yeah. I was going to say something like, you know, almost $30 million.
Yes. You know, right. So we don't have the person's name yet, but it'll be interesting to see who that is. But I like that just warms my heart that this woman finally gets to do this thing that she's wanted to do for so long.
Okay. Well, her name, Wally Funk, on top of it all. Right. best name ever. And I got to say, coming to a movie theater near you, this sounds like a new Netflix series. Like, if not a series, then definitely a movie, you know, because what a heartbreak that she can outperform all these men. And then 1961, really lip service to women and people of color by our biggest institutions. And, you know, look where she is today. I mean, it just feels like a made for TV movie.
Oh, absolutely. Like, if someone's not already working on a book about her, like, I'm going to start it because she sounds fascinating.
Yeah, she really does. And then SpaceX, you know, we're hearing a lot about SpaceX lately. They launched 88 satellites. Wow, that seems like a lot.
And this is, you know, think about this satellite trip like a barge with a bunch of shipping containers on it, because it's kind of a rideshare mission in terms of these 88 satellites are from a lot of different places. They're government satellites. There's commercial customers. NASA's one of them, a radar satellite company, three satellites for SpaceX for their Starlink internet constellation that they're building. I mean, the 88 satellites went up, I think, is just such an exciting and interesting time. I mean, the future is now, right?
Yeah, it's amazing that Elon Musk is, for all the crazy around him, he just has, let's leave it at that. He has incredible brilliance and vision about where things are going. And you almost feel like he and Jeff Bezos are in this kind of arm wrestling of who's going to get to space, who's going to get to Mars, and the world be damned. This is where they're putting their fortunes. It's interesting to watch. And another high concept for a movie.
Exactly. Maybe this could be, that's a sequel.
That's right. Wally goes up and then Elon goes chasing them. I don't know.
Sure, clearly, I like it.
Yeah, writing screenplays. not what I should be doing right now. Amy, I hope you have a great holiday weekend.
Thanks so much. Same to you.